The Money Show. Investment School.
All about money, of course. It's brilliant. It really is. It's fabulous. Pink Floyd, the album was The Dark Side of the Moon. What's the connection? It's not as obvious as you might think, because we're doing The Dark Side of the ETF, the Exchange Traded Fund, this evening. You didn't see that link coming, Gary Boyson, director at Rand Swiss. Good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, I didn't see that link coming.
Nor did anyone else in the world. It's just my warped mind. But now, listen, Gary, exchange-traded funds are held up as this wonderful investment product. They are simpler to understand. You can do an index of almost anything and create an exchange-traded fund. You could do an index of, for example, companies run around the world by women, or you could do companies that pay super dividends, or whatever the case might be. You could do almost anything. Exchange-traded funds are good investment products, generally speaking, aren't they?
Yes. So there's a lot of information there, a lot I agree with and disagree with. But in general, yes, I would say the rise of exchange-traded funds over the last couple of decades has been a net positive for retail investors in the short term, definitely, because it's slashed costs. There's no question about that. You know, if you look at the traditional mutual funds and how they created, they typically do have a higher cost than higher total expense ratio and higher ongoing cost than many ETFs. And yes, as you said, they're incredibly flexible instruments, which I think have maybe been a little bit underplayed in the South African market. So if you look at the adoption of ETFs overseas, it's been very, very widespread. So you've seen, you know, from 2008, around 44% of advisors would advise clients to hold an ETF as a portion of their portfolio. By 2018, that was at about 87%, but South Africa still remains a little bit behind. We still much prefer our unit trusts, and you know, there's all sorts of reasons for that as well. But in general, I would agree they are good products. They are tax efficient as well, rather than holding direct stock portfolios. You know, they're going to reweight as well, as you mentioned. You can kind of create an index of anything, and you know, if you're in the top 40. You know, the companies that are falling are going to drop out, and the companies that are growing are going to be included. So, and you're not going to have to buy and sell that underlying, because you're going to hold essentially a unit of the ETF. So you're not going to realize capital gains tax each time. It's not going to create a CGT event for you. So there are plenty of positives around there. But, you know, as I think the song at the beginning of the show alluded to, there's plenty of negatives as well.
Okay, I want to get on to those negatives, because we speak very positively about exchange-traded funds for all of those reasons that you state, and all of those things are true. But I'm curious on the dark side of the ETF as well, because unfortunately nothing is perfect, and there is a consequence to absolutely every action you take in markets. And so we'll get on to that in some detail. But I was fortunate enough to be at the last Warren Buffett annual general meeting, where Jack Bogle, the grand daddy, if you like, of the exchange traded funds market, was present. And Warren Buffett, the world's most successful investor, asked poor old Jack Bogle, who could barely stand, to stand so that the crowd could see him. And poor Jack struggled to his feet. He was, you know, he's died now, but he was an old guy back then, and said, you know, Jack Bogle must be thanked by every single American investor, because he saved them billions of dollars. And when Warren Buffett says that about the granddaddy of an investment class, I wonder just, you know, whether the positives don't outweigh the negatives.
No, sure. And I think it kind of, you know, because this is investment school, we've got to just try and point out the risks that are inherent in the market as well. So, I mean, obviously, you know, if you look at something like the Vanguard products, you know, they are typically very, very low cost ETFs. They've got, you know, very good tracking, and really what they say on the can is what they do inside them. Now that's not the case with all ETFs. And I think the problem that has been created in the market is the sense that, you know, all ETFs are good ETFs because ETFs mean that you're not paying someone to do this. It's also the idea that all ETFs are passive in the ETFs that track an index, and it's passive investment and ETFs are kind of almost synonymous, but they're actually two very different things. So, you know, the whole idea behind the Vanguard ETFs was this low-cost passive tracker that was just going to go track S&P 500. And I mean, Warren Buffett said in many shareholder letters that, you know, when he dies, if his wife had to make all the investment decisions, the best thing she can do is back America, go and buy the S&P 500 and forget about it. But the point is that all ETFs are not either active or passive. So at least are not all passive index products. So it was actually in 2008 they created the first active ETF, and many ETFs are very, very active, and they charge like active managers. I mean, you've got something in the US, you've got many products in the US, you know, Direction Russell 1000 Value versus Growth ETF, for example, which is basically a hedge fund, which should only be useful for qualified investors. You've also got a lot of these ETFs that don't do exactly what they say on the package either. So if you look at, you know, and they've got some wonderful names as well. So if you look at it, you know, a couple of years ago, cannabis investing was this huge theme, and ETFs are generally pretty good at playing that theme. And there was this kind of rise of all these cannabis-based ETFs that you could go and invest in, clearly targeted at retail clients that probably aren't even going to open the fact sheet and have a look at what's inside of it, and certainly don't have the systems to go and really, you know, pull the ETF apart and have a look at what's inside it. So I picked one of them. It's basically, you know, the advisor shares pure cannabis ETF, which, you know, has the fun ticker YOLO, you know, for you only live once. And that's really the kind of the attitude, I think, of the product. And the biggest holding of this product, if you just do literally 2 minutes investigation, is going to be a company called Village Farms International, which makes up about 15% of your cannabis theme that you wanted to play. It's a Toronto listed company, but if you actually then go and dig into the company and look at what the company actually does, yes, it's a vertically integrated greenhouse grower, but 92.24% of its profits come from fresh produce like tomatoes, bell peppers, and cucumbers. Only 7% of the actual business has anything to do with cannabis whatsoever. So the idea that they're packaging this up as a cannabis ETF, the biggest holding they have, you know, the slice of the cannabis market that you're actually getting exposure to, if you want to go and explore that theme as an investor, is absolutely minuscule. But just because there's some very tenuous link, a link almost as tenuous as I suppose the song at the segment.
Hurtful.
Is there. So it's, yeah, so I think one, be very careful about the ETF that you're investing in. You know, in the US these days, I mean, it's been an absolute explosion in the market there. You've got 2,000, you know, as of 2020 numbers, you've got 2,204 ETFs that you can choose from. In 2003, you had 123. But really, there's a lot of different stuff out there, and a lot of it is real garbage.
Now, this is important, Gary, and I'm delighted that you're bringing our attention to it, because it is easy to simply look at an asset class and go, well, therefore, you know, an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, it is one ETF is good, therefore they are all good, and let's tear them apart. Let's look at them in a greater level of detail. Gary Boyson is our headmaster of the Investment School on this Tuesday evening. He's a director at Rand Swiss. We're looking at the dark underbelly, the underside of the ETF market. And Gary's making a compelling case that if you're going to go into ETFs, at least go in with your eyes wide open and your brain engaged. More on that in a moment.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
Gary Boyson, director at Rand Swiss, is our headmaster of the Investment School this evening. And not every exchange-traded fund is created equal. Some are downright sneaky in the way in which they package themselves and sell themselves. Not everything you see is what you get, particularly if you don't bother to look at the prospectus, if you don't go online and do your research. The active ETF is not something that I was aware of existing, and these have begun to emerge, as you see clever marketers capitalize on the brand of ETF. And immediately people will assume, well, it must be good because it's an ETF and it's cheaper. And it's an index and therefore I will be fine. But you do get caught out. You're also concerned, I think, Gary Boyson, like many people in the, many stock pickers, people who like to build portfolios of individual companies and study themes and study balance sheets of companies and study their financials. What you like to do is that. And you're worried that if all of us go into passive investing, you're going to be out of a job, which is an understandable concern. But not only that, is ultimately, if enough people are buying the average, well, what is the incentive in terms of owning shares directly? How are you worried that they might break the market?
Yeah, well, actually, that's a, you know, we've got to talk about costs before the end of the segment, because that's also a very important part of this. But yes, I kind of, we do have an active portfolio as well. So, I mean, of course, we do look at it and we do analyze companies, and we do feel a little bit hard done by when other people, you know, if you're buying and selling companies as a trader and you're kind of narrowing discounts and trying to take those little opportunities, you do get a bit frustrated, you know, especially, let's say, in the kind of mid-cap space in South Africa, where you find great opportunities, you buy into them, but all this passive money is just sitting there, and you can't get proper price discovery. So you might know Distell is a great company. You might want to go and buy it, but there's not enough participants anymore to really get the stock to move. And you see, because everyone's just going into passive ETFs, and you kind of see the market breaking a little bit. It's one of the big criticisms of ETFs. It's kind of quite a general criticism. So, you know, a lot of managers have it as well. And it doesn't really speak to each individual person, because the way that we think about it is, I normally use the analogy that it's almost like pirating a video. But I just point out that it's not illegal, or pirating a movie at least, but it's not illegal to copy an active manager strategy, buy an ETF or an index and benefit from their work. So it's more like going to the library. And kind of the analogy of going to the library would work that, you know, you get all these authors that write these books, and I mean, they need to sell books to essentially make a living. What happens is, if everyone, you know, there's a couple of libraries, but everyone keeps on kind of duplicating, you know, and it's not a library where you go and rent a book, it's a library where you can just go and get a free copy of that book. And if you take that library book out, you have all the benefit of the information and the knowledge, but you don't actually have to pay the active manager for it. And when that happens, you do get markets starting to break. And you know, it's quite a complex idea to try and package in a very short segment. But, you know, the kind of results that happen is, one, you get very low price discovery in underlying stocks. You get things like, you know, asset bubbles, where big tech in the US, which is just present in so many ETFs, attract so much capital, even though there's no one actually looking at whether this is a reasonable price or not. And you suddenly get these hugely extended valuations in certain segments of the market, and all sorts of distortions starting to be created because of this lack of price discovery.
For example, I mean, if you're an index investor, if you're invested in the top 40 index of the JSE, you own 20% of your portfolio is in Naspers and Prosus, whether you like it or not. And the last 2 days have seen those shares come down, you know, 14-15%. You don't have a choice. You don't have a sense of proportion. You don't have a sense of risk mitigation. You just follow the market up or down, which on average over many, many years has shown to be a better strategy than trying to pick active managers, for example, in the stock markets. But it is deeply uncomfortable that you are kind of trapped. It's a sort of a very expensive Stockholm syndrome, if you like.
In a way, you are. And, you know, again, okay, that comes down to, you know, the concentration risk around ETFs, which I think has been highlighted with the big fall in Naspers and Prosus' share price. You know, it makes up, you know, in some index trackers, 17% of the index. But that's not even the worst of it. I mean, if you look at something like the Satrix Resi, for example, you know, you would think, Satrix Resi, that's a wonderful diversified resource index. Actually, if you buy the Satrix Resi, you've got almost 30% in Anglo and 30% in Billiton. So 60% of your money in a diversified resource basket is actually in two securities. So yes, concentration risk is going to be an issue as well.
But in John, the same way as if you buy the
touch on costs.
Yeah, absolutely. If you buy the S&P 500, 60% of that is in the FANGs, for example. So it's the same problem. Talk to me about costs, because the perception is and the belief is that they are considerably cheaper than going and paying an active manager.
And this is what the one thing I've got to get across in the segment. To if I'm a headmaster of an investment school, it must be said. So yes, you do look at the total expense ratio. It's very transparent because of regulation. You can just go and download the minimum disclosure document. You can go and see it. So that is the first cost that you've got to be aware of. I was shocked to see that so many people don't even look at that. So if you consider two almost identical products, the SIG US and SIG 500, which are both S&P 500 trackers by the same company. One has an 86 basis point cost, one has a 15 basis point cost. So the one is multiple times more expensive for investors. You wouldn't believe it, but the one that's 86 basis points has attracted 6 billion rands worth of assets, while the cheaper one, which is obviously newer, which why it hasn't gained the traction, has only 2 billion rands worth of assets. So clearly investors are looking at this total expense ratio. It's essentially the same product by the same house, but they haven't done their due diligence. They haven't, you know, kind of looked at it and said, hey, wait a minute, let's switch into a low cost option. It's going to work out for us. But it's not that cost that I really want to focus on. The other hidden cost in ETFs is the spread cost. So one of the big ideas behind ETFs are that they trade exactly like stocks. That's the whole pitch. It's an exchange traded fund. You can go into a stockbroking portfolio and you can go and buy it like a share. The problem is ETFs don't trade like shares at all. Shares trade in a natural market where all the buyers and sellers of like Anglo or Billiton, they'll come together and they have a bid and an offer and people, you know, trade at that value, and it's a natural market. ETFs don't have that kind of volume going through them on a regular basis. Remember, these are passive products. So what they have instead are market makers. So you've got a bank that sits in the background and they guarantee liquidity, a bid and an offer. They do this because the product, if it's a Satrix Resi or if it's a top 40 tracker, for example, it must track the market over time. So they will move their bid and offer up all the time. Now, inside that spread is a cost. Now, I looked at a couple of them just over the last 2 days, just pulled up the data and had a look. On average, you're paying about 0.5% to that market maker for the privilege. So whenever you buy and sell an ETF, you're paying a 0.5% fee to get in and out on average. Now, that is not, as I said, not all ETFs are created equal. Now, looking at something like the Rhodium ETF from One Invest, looking at the spread cost. So basically the difference between the bid and offer. Now that one, you know, sometimes there's a market maker, sometimes they pull and it just becomes the natural market. Over the last 2 days, the spread has been as wide as 8.8%. That's how wide that spread can be. So when you cross that spread, you're essentially giving up almost 8% of performance, and a second later you could be 8% down, and it's not got anything to do with the natural volatility in rhodium. It's got to do with the width of that spread on the instrument. So just be very careful when you're actually placing your order to buy and sell. Remember, you're not in a natural market. This is normally an artificial market, and often, you know, if you're doing large size, which often if we're doing large size for clients, we'll phone the market maker and say, listen, we're going to put through 10 or 15 or 20 million into this thing. Please, can you narrow your spread all the way down? And the guys will come all the way down to sort of 5 to 10 basis points, so 0.05 to 0.1%. And it will narrow and make the cost significantly cheaper for clients. But, you know, for someone that's just operating on an online trading platform and thinking, great, I can go and buy ETFs, they're always a sound investment. Just be careful when you do your execution as well. You can get taken for 2, 3, 4% as you enter your ETF.
Thank you, Gary Boyson. I mean, a really valuable and important discussion, and we went through it quite quickly. So please listen to the podcast again. And Gary Boyson with some very salient warnings there as to how you can be caught out. Assumptions are very, very dangerous in any profession, in any walk of life, but particularly when it comes to your money. You make the assumption because of the label on the packet, and you don't delve in deeper and go and read the recipe on the back as well. So be careful of just accepting things at face value. I think that is the absolutely pivotal lesson, with a lot more detail coming through from Gary Boyson, director at Rand Swiss, headmaster of our Tuesday Investment School.